Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team, the FAST Team. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Amy Loboda, editor of Aviation for Women magazine and FAST Team representative, Fort Myers, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome to FAA's Managing Safety. I'm your host, Amy Loboda. I'm the editor-in-chief of Aviation for Women magazine, but that doesn't mean a thing today because here I have with me Ben R. Coleman. Now, Ben has been one of my colleagues in the FAST Team Safety Program over the years. However, as of late, his hangout has been Iraq, the other side of the world. Last time I talked to you, Ben, you were in Kirkuk. Things have changed since then.
Yeah, it's a pretty dynamic situation over there, Amy. And Kirkuk, up to the north part of Iraq, is kind of the garden spot. And there was a need to open up a new landing zone there at the embassy there in Baghdad. And being the one of the lead accident investigator safety officers there, they saw fit to move me down to Baghdad.
Well, since that happened, what's your new program in Baghdad?
Well, the new program is kind of an extension of the old, whereas we hold daily meetings. We have weekly safety briefs of all the employees at the unit, and we have monthly very, very detailed aircrew briefings where we discuss items that will make sure that we come home to protect another day. And notice I use the term protect, not fight. That's one thing that, as you know, that the role has changed over there, and all the combat troops are out, and officially, I guess the president has named that the war's over.
Can you tell me in a little bit more detail what a safety briefing over there would be like? Is it that much different than what we do at home?
Well, it really is, Amy, because we go through intelligent reports and we see if there's something that's come up that needs to be discussed in detail before it becomes a historical event, i.e. a hot spot in the area and where our operations take us. If there's a hot spot, we common sense-wise stay away from it. And let me segue back into my first comment is about the war being over. Mm-hmm. That was tongue-in-cheek because someone has failed to notify the insurgents, the Sunnis, and some of the religious factions over there that the war's over. We would appreciate somebody being able to get that word to them, because they're still sending in rockets, mortars, and IEDs, and we're still getting an awful lot of activity that I don't know if the media really wants that to get out, but those are the facts, Amy. The war is, it depends on what you call a war. If somebody points a gun at you and shoots at you, is that a war? At the instant that the gunfire is felt, as far as I'm concerned, that's a war. So,
you actually took away my next question, which was how hot is it over there? And you just answered it, I think.
Well, there's two forms of hot. We've been averaging 120, 123 degrees Fahrenheit. Over the past several months. I hadn't seen a drop of rain, and that's hot. And also about every other day we get a rocket attack. Usually it's a 107 Mike that comes in, and people say, well, Ben, why don't you be careful and keep your head down? And Amy, they don't understand. It's the folks that shoot these rockets have no idea where they're going other than a general direction. And as you start hearing them come in, you have no idea where they're going to hit. So if you're in a bunker, it might give you about a 10% protection factor. But when they hit, and it takes everything out within probably a 35 to 50 meter radius.
That says to me that it's very hard to give a safety briefing because it's hard to feel safe over there.
No, you're constantly on edge. It is a war zone still, and it's a hazardous area. There's no relaxation, if you will, no imbibing. There's no alcohol, and you don't want to be dulled. Your senses need to be sharp because you may need to take cover if there's a multiple attack coming in of successive rockets. And that's primarily, you know, when the first one hits, it's a wake up call. Hello, somebody's trying to get in touch with us. And then you take defensive measures at that point in case there's some more coming in. You know, grab your gear, put on all your headgear and your body armor. But it's a very interesting way to provide aviation safety, and it's something in this country that we need to share with our listeners and our patrons, that just being able to go and discuss in a safe manner, in a protected environment, some of the virtues of this wonderful industry that we love so much, is quite an honor. It's a freedom that we sometimes take for granted.
Oh, I would say more than sometimes. When you do, like you said, you identify a hazard and you figure out a way to avoid that hazard, but sometimes you've got to be where you've got to be. What do you do then?
It's called keeping your head on a swivel. It's staying aware that maintenance wise, we cannot afford to have any issues other than environmental issues to deal with. That's why our maintenance is second to none over there. Sometimes getting parts is difficult, and it takes a lot of the new term, which is a very old term, is field expedience. You do what you have to do to get the job done, and it creates a lot of creativity. That's something that I guess some of our regulations and regulatory restrictions here in not a war zone, you don't have to take off and go and protect folks aloft with firepower here. Usually our trips are elective, Amy, and that's one that when I do finish this contract and come back over, I do want to share with folks the necessary actions that we have and we place on ourselves. And like I explained to most of the folks over there, that if we have a weather accident over here, usually the investigation is done in a beautiful, clear VFR day. And the matter of one day of someone either delaying or postponing a trip, or that part that was on order that I think it'll be okay and I should get it changed before I leave, but I'm going to go anyway. We've got to get a hold of that mentality and quench it and remind ourselves daily that do we really have to go? In a war zone, you've got people's lives at stake. And our role is diplomatic security for convoy protection and aloft a set of eyes, if you will. All of our missions are flown under about 300 feet, and they're fast. We stay moving. It's hard to hit a moving target, and that's what we do over there. Over here, we've got to remember that we're not in a war zone or war environment, and safety is very, very easy to accomplish, but you've got to build it into your system. And that's the biggest difference, I think, Amy, between the aviation safety activity in a war zone and in Iraq, as opposed to here in the 50.
Ben, I tend to agree with you. We're going to take a quick break here at FAA's Managing Safety, and we'll be right back with Ben R. Coleman.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's rejoin Amy Lavoda and Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios.
Welcome back to FAA's Managing Safety Podcast. I'm Amy Lavoda, your host. I am the editor-in-chief of Aviation for Women magazine. I have with me here today Ben R. Coleman. Ben is doing safety in Iraq. He's doing diplomatic security cover, basically, air flights for people in Iraq. And you're working with the U.S. government, though, is that correct?
Yeah, it is. It's the Department of State Air Wing is the unit that is contracted to provide this aerial security. Now, of course, that our U.S. combatant forces are out of there.
Excellent. Excellent. And the U.S. Department of State is doing a lot over in Iraq now, I would guess, given that the combat presence has left. One would like to believe that the 50,000 plus people of carrying U.S. passports that are still in Iraq are there for a more reconstructive purpose? Yes? No? Maybe?
That is a fact. The provincial reconstruction teams, or we call them PRTs, that is their role over there, is to rebuild and to teach. It's a very arduous task when you still have people that don't want you over there. And the folks that are trying, bless their heart, they're trying just as hard as they can. People that want so hard to enjoy our freedoms and our way of life, and folks on the other side of it that for some reason they don't want change. They just want control, and they want to do what they've done for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. So it's quite a dichotomy, and I'm not sure what the answer is, Amy, but I wake up in clear conscience that my role there is to provide experience of how not to become a statistic when operating our aircraft for our missions. And that's both maintenance and operations.
Ben, how long have you been in this position?
Coming up on a year now. And it may go on for me for another year, but I'm waiting for some things to solidify, and I have gotten enough in place and stood up over there that again, I could leave the contract and know that I still did a good job. But here's the thing that kind of, I don't want to use the term that sucks you in, but it starts to become a way of life. And I have so much appreciation, more appreciation for our military, because that is the way of life. And if you're a soldier and you're a troop, I don't care if it's infantry or flight crew, your whole life is dedicated to that mission. And I have not been in the prior military capacity, and this is the closest paramilitary activity I've been in, but it starts to wear on you, and that is a little bit of a feeling of guilt when I come home for R&R, because I feel like I need to be over there helping do what I do, and that save lives. And it's a very, very important role that we take on as peacekeepers, and everyone that's involved with aviation safety over here. This is my new philosophy: is everyone is a peacekeeper.
Very interesting. Tell me, can you see any change at all in the year that you've been there in the country? You tell me that it still feels a lot like a combat situation. Any change?
I would like to say yes, but the truth of the matter is no. It is still hot, and the diplomatic measures are in place. And I'm just hoping that they will become more and more effective as time passes.
Yeah, so essentially our peacekeeping mission, our educational mission, and our rebuilding mission has yet to change the hearts and minds of the really tough element of that society that has been the problem all along.
Yeah, that's we can't reach them, and they reach out to us in form of small arms fire, and ancient Russian rocketry. There's so many caches around that city, and actually the whole territory, and who knows where they are. And right now, it's up to the Iraqi security forces to find them, seek them out. And we have controlled detonations daily when we do find them to just blow them up. They're usually on the military bases. But there's fewer and fewer bases. All of the prisons have been turned over to the Iraqis. And it's disheartening that you find out a prison that, or a detainee center, let's put it to you that way, used to have like 1,900 detainees, and within a couple months, they're down to 400 detainees because of releases and special situations that were out of our hands. So I don't know, if I had been locked up for 4 or 5 years and had an opportunity to get out, I don't know if I would be reformed or not. I might be a little bit bitter and want to go and get another pound of flesh, but that's just the way it is over there.
I understand. I understand. It's tough to swallow on this side, but what we appreciate is your candidness, because people need to know. People need to know, and we also deeply appreciate what you're doing over there to make sure, just as you said, Ben, that people come back whole, and that's key. That's key. If they're going to go over there and do good works, they should at least understand how to do the best they can not to get hurt in the process. We deeply appreciate what you're doing towards that cause. Certainly all the staff at FAA Safety miss you, and we're happy to see you back here in Lakeland, Florida, but we know it's temporary. If you decide to take that extra year, we're behind you all the way, whatever you decide, Ben.
That's great, Amy. And let me put one caveat. Anything that I've shared with you here is available on internet. So I haven't really let the cat out of the bag, but it's something that if you don't seek this information, you will not find it, because it's not coming out in the daily press. And it's something that I believe the some powers to be would like to sequester some of the negativity. But it's just the facts, Amy, and that's, you know, I've always been just the facts type of a guy, and I don't care if that was an FAA inspector or now an aviation safety officer in a war zone.
Ben, safety is about the facts, and we're happy to have you here on the show. We're going to wrap it up today with Ben R. Coleman. Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us here at FAA's Managing Safety. You can download this as a podcast off of iTunes, or listen to it on Flightline Internet Radio, or find us archived at faaproductionstudios.com. Ben, is there a shout out any way people can reach you, send you our cards and letters?
Well, absolutely. The my website is still up, AMS Institute, and actually my email is, I believe you can still reach me through the FAST team, and but that's if you seek, you will find. Just do a Google search for me, and send me a note.
Ben R. Coleman, you bet. You've got our wholehearted support. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Amy. Talk to you next time.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.